Thank you, Cynthia. Good morning, everybody. It's good to be here again and have a chance to talk about our liquids pipelines business and how we're going to continue to keep a prominent role for it in Enbridge and not allow Bill to overtake us in the coming years. It is an exciting time at Enbridge as we've moved forward with the merged business, the enhanced diversification that it brings, and the solid business platforms. And while the oil pipeline assets that we acquired as part of the merger were not as significant as those on the natural gas side, we are very excited about what it means for our business. We have new assets in our portfolio that offer some interesting opportunity I'm going to get into. We acquired some really great talent from the Express Plat organization. And now that we represent only 50% of the earnings of the company as opposed to the 75% that's been talked about earlier, we view our window of growth opportunity opens back up to a number of things that we've thought about in the past but did not pursue. I'm going to spend the next half hour or so running through our outlook, and I'm going to focus on the commercial models and competitive positioning of our assets, our mainline system, and the current environment surrounding competing pipelines in Western Canada, opportunities to continue to grow the business, including an update on our Line 3 replacement project. We believe that our assets represent North America's premier portfolio, and as pipeliners, we're always proud of our map. Those of you who have followed us for some time would be familiar with this map, but there have been some important additions to it since we last talked to you at Enbridge Days in 2015. First, since that time, we've completed the build-out of our market access plan through the completion of the Line 9 reversal project and the Southern Access Extension that each came into service towards the end of 2015. Second, as I've already mentioned, we now have the Express and Platte pipelines in the mix. And finally, on June 1st, the Dakota Access and Energy Transfer Company pipelines came into service. What was a great map has gotten even better. As I get into discussing the various segments of our business, you're going to hear a few themes that are common to the assets within the portfolio, and they're common to the themes that you have already heard from both Al and Bill. They're largely underpinned by low-risk commercial models. They offer competitive tolls to the best markets, and our customer mix of refineries, producers, and integrated companies represent strong, creditworthy customers. You've seen the part of this chart on the left a couple times already today, recognizing the 50% of EBITDA that our business now represents. On the right, you can see the growing diversity of earnings mix within the various liquids pipelines business segments. For years and years and years, we were dominated by our mainline system, and over the past decade or so, we've seen this mix change, and as we think again about the new opportunities that might be coming forward, we continue to see that we're going to have a more diverse mix within our own business unit itself. The slide also highlights the common thread of low-risk commercial models, take or pay, cost of service, index rates, and our competitive tolling settlement that drive the bulk of our earnings. With a combined capacity of 2.85 million barrels per day, the mainline system continues to be the crown jewel of our portfolio. The system's multiple pipelines, extensive operating terminals, and ability to transport various grades of crude, NGL, and refined products allow us to provide service offerings and flexibility that is unmatched by competing pipelines. Extensive market access options are available to shippers on the system, whether it's refined products to Saskatchewan and Manitoba, NGL to markets in northern Michigan and Sarnia, crude oil to directly connected refineries in Minnesota, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and southwestern Ontario, and to refineries in the U.S. Gulf Coast, Patoka, and Quebec via our market access pipelines. Underpinning the mainline is the Competitive Toll Settlement, or CTS, which has continued our history of innovative toll frameworks targeted at the needs of our customers. This 10-year deal, which commenced in July 2011, has provided stable, highly competitive tolls on the mainline into our traditional markets and was a foundation requirement to support the successful establishment of our market access pipelines. And with that, let me move on and talk a bit about those market access pipelines. Completion of the market access pipeline program has solidified the competitive position of our mainline and bolstered our outlook for continued expansion of the mainline due to our ability to move increased volumes to established markets. Each of these new markets has been very important to our customers, as has been evidenced by the strong pricing that has resulted from Canadian barrels now having access to the U.S. Gulf Coast and from North Dakota Bakken barrels having access to refinery markets in eastern Canada and in Quebec. The pipelines are each supported by long-term take-or-pay contracts that provide toll stability to the customer and earning stability to Enbridge. With a total capacity of about 1.2 million barrels a day, 600,000 on Flanagan South and Seaway, and 300 on each of Line 9 and Southern Access Extension, these pipelines represent take-or-pay volumes of greater than a million barrels a day, which creates significant demand pull for barrels off the mainline system. Flanagan and South and Seaway have provided Canada's first large-scale access for heavy crude to the U.S. Gulf Coast and includes tidewater access via two Seaway docks. The Line 9 reversal targets the movement of light barrels to the Suncor and Valero refineries in Quebec and at the same time created additional demand on our system in southwest Ontario from refiners who were historically importing barrels off the Portland pipeline. Finally, the Southern Access Extension offers mixed service deliveries for light crude into the Patoka market and heavy barrels that may be finding their way to the eastern U.S. Gulf Coast via barge. The strength and optionality that our markets represent is central to our competitive position on the mainline. I've spoken about the market access pipelines and their take-or-pay underpinning, so let me spend a few minutes talking about our core traditional markets in PADD 2 in southwestern Ontario. Serving cities like Minneapolis, Chicago, Detroit, and Toledo, the mainline system is directly connected to 1.9 million barrels per day of refining capacity that is highly reliant on a diet of Canadian crude. Many of these refineries have invested, in some cases, multiple billions of dollars to position themselves to primarily consume Canadian heavy and light or synthetic barrels. Their inland location and distance from crude oil sources has always made this the highest price market. Coupled with a significant toll advantage on the Enbridge system, these markets have and will continue to drive the strongest netbacks for Canadian producers. Our expectation is that this price advantage will ensure these markets are fully served before any spot barrels move on competing pipelines. And I want to give you a brief illustration of why. Some of you may recall a similar slide to this that we have used in the past, but we want to highlight it again to underscore the strength of our connected market versus spot market flows to other markets. The U.S. Gulf Coast is generally viewed to be the most significant competing option for Canadian heavy barrels in the North American market. Using round numbers to make this math simple, spot toll on a pipeline to the Gulf Coast, Enbridge's or any other, is in the neighborhood of $8 a barrel. If the competing heavy crude in the U.S. Gulf Coast is Maya and is priced at $50 a barrel, then a shipper can generate a $42 netback at Hardisty. Picking up on the theme of my previous slide, a refinery in Chicago has to pay about $3 a barrel to move that Mayan barrel from the Gulf Coast. So they can pay $53 in Chicago and be indifferent to the competing options. With an Enbridge toll of $5, this represents the potential for a netback in Hardisty of $48. Now, we all know that a market doesn't work that perfectly, but the potential for a $6 improvement to the Hardisty netback allows the refiner to capture part of that value to lower its supply cost, while at the same time allowing the producer to capture some of the value in the form of an improved netback. We understand the strength of the pull from take-or-pay contracted pipeline capacity on our own system and on others, but based upon this analysis, we expect that our traditional connected refineries will be fully served before spot barrels move to other markets. So now that I've wrapped up reviewing the competitive position of the Enbridge system, I want to move on and talk about future pipeline needs and what we have planned. This slide represents CAPP's forecast versus the current pipeline capacities and Western Canadian demand in service today. You can see a capacity shortfall is estimated to be in the range of 600,000 barrels a day in 2020, 875,000 barrels a day by 2025, and 1.5 million barrels a day by 2030. Our Line 3 replacement project, targeted to be in service in 2019, is expected to be the first new tranche of capacity to serve this market and become the platform from which further staged expansions in the 2019 and 2020 timeframe and into the next decade can be implemented on the Enbridge system. We are highly confident that the competitive position of the mainline and the staged development of these options is a good fit to meet the needs of our customers well into the latter half of the next decade. So let's talk a bit about our capacity additions, starting with an update on Line 3. As a reminder, the Line 3 replacement project will restore the full capability of Line 3 back to about 760,000 barrels a day, which represents an additional increment of capacity versus today of about 375,000 barrels a day. The project is underpinned by a 15-year toll surcharge on all mainline barrels that generates an attractive return with downside protection below a volume floor of 2.35 million barrels per day. I'm going to run through this update in terms of the regulatory jurisdictions that we're dealing with and where we're at on the permitting stages. In Canada, the project has been approved by the National Energy Board, and while we have certain conditions to meet within that permit, we are free to commence construction. To meet the 2019 in-service date, construction in Canada can commence as late as the summer of 2018, but we are currently undertaking pre-construction activities across several spreads in Canada to position us to commence construction later this summer if we make that determination. We are fully permitted in North Dakota, and as you may recall, the cross-border segment of Line 3 has already been fully replaced. This leaves only about 15 miles of remaining construction in North Dakota, and it'll be executed along with adjacent construction in Minnesota. We're also fully permitted on the 18-mile section in the state of Wisconsin, and due to heightened integrity concerns we have with the existing Line 3 in that segment, construction in Wisconsin will be completed this year. So that brings me to talk about where we're at in Minnesota, where we're seeing regulatory progress, but we are not yet fully permitted. The Department of Commerce has issued the draft EIS for the project on May 15th, which has triggered a 60-day period of open houses and public comment. Following the close of the comment period, the Department of Commerce has committed to deliver on its statutory requirement to finalize the EIS by August of this year. Beginning in September, an administrative law judge will conduct the certificate of need and route proceedings that are scheduled to lead to a recommendation by the ALJ to the Public Utilities Commission in February of next year, and a subsequent PUC decision will be expected in April of next year. There are a number of permits that can only be granted once PUC approval is in place, so we believe that we can be in a position to be fully permitted to construct possibly by the end of Q2 of next year. Construction is expected to take about a year, which puts us with a targeted in-service date for all the components of the project by mid-year 2019. The complementary work on Southern Access expansion to move the barrels out of Superior is in really good shape. The work is primarily related to only one station, and that station is fully permitted, and we expect no issues with meeting the timing of Line 3. Now that you're up to speed on Line 3, let me move on and talk about the other options that we have to add as much as an additional 500,000 barrels a day of capacity for Canadian crude. One of the benefits of a replaced Line 3 is that it provides us with greater flexibility in terms of managing the crude slates across the mainline, and two increments of capacity totaling 175,000 barrels a day can be created shortly after it comes into service in 2019. First, we actively employ drag-reducing agent in the system to help us overcome physical bottlenecks at certain spots along the pipeline. We have identified an opportunity to employ additional DRA skids that can provide up to 75,000 barrels a day of very low-cost capacity, and due to the relatively small volume increment, no regulatory permitting is required. Second, we have 100,000 barrels a day of contracted volume that currently flows from North Dakota into our mainline at Cromer, Manitoba. With the changing dynamics within North Dakota, there's a potential to negotiate a deal to terminate these flows and allow Canadian-produced barrels to move in the mainline capacity. Discussions on this are at a very early stage with our North Dakota shippers, but we think a win-win deal can be developed to optimize the outcome for Enbridge and for our customers. Once again, there's no permitting requirements related to this opportunity. Looking into the next decade, we see three other options to add up to 325,000 barrels a day of new capacity through mainline station upgrades, restoration of the full capacity of Line 4, and the potential reversal of our Southern Lights pipeline. Each of these solutions requires a longer lead time to complete, but relative to construction of a large new pipeline, they are highly executable. Of course, with the exception of the 100,000 barrels a day related to the potential idle of the Bakken pipeline, which is just replacing North Dakota crude with Canadian crude, mainline expansion will require that we have a complementary market access solution, and we do. First, mainline capacity growth will eliminate the current apportionment on our system, which we estimate to be 150 to 170,000 barrels a day. Second, the growing contract profile on the Flanagan South pipeline will take up to 100,000 barrels a day. Finally, there's expansion capability within our market access pipelines, primarily the Southern Access Extension, and a potential billion-dollar expansion of Flanagan South and Seaway to take the capacity of the system to 850,000 barrels a day. So let's go back to the Western Canada Basin capacity chart I showed you earlier and see what these staged solutions look like. As you can see, these solutions can be staged to meet industry's needs through to about 2028. We've been actively engaged with our customers to explain the features of our options and the clear benefits. They're highly executable with no to low permitting requirements. They are economic based on the current CTS toll without the need for surcharges due to their low capital costs, and they can be timed to meet the production growth profile. Obviously, there are competing pipelines in the mix right now, but our customers want us to continue with the development of all of these options. There is still concern amongst our shippers about the viability of the competing pipelines getting approved and, if approved, getting built. As a pipe replacement project, Line 3 seems to be the front runner in people's minds in terms of being permitted and built, so our shippers want the options that it creates to be fully developed. So with that, let me move on and wrap up with an overview of our entire mainline plan. There are four elements to this plan. We need to continue to maximize current throughput. We need to complete the execution of our secured growth projects. We need to advance our mainline expansion options. And we're planning on beginning the initiation of discussions with our shippers about a post-CTS toll framework. Our team's been doing a great job maximizing throughput on the mainline, whether it is implementing solutions to create smaller increments of capacity, minimizing maintenance and integrity downtime, or optimizing crude slates. Our goal is to maximize as much capacity as possible to be made available on a monthly basis and then do everything we can to fill it every day. These efforts are extremely important to our customers during this period of apportionment, and it's important to us as well. Generates new revenues and continues to solidify our competitive position. I've provided an overview of Line 3 and the Southern Access Expansion, and we're laser-focused on bringing these projects into service in 2019. Line 3 represents the first tranche of new capacity from Western Canada, and it is critical that we get it in service given the continuing uncertainties about competing pipelines. As I've also covered, it then sets the foundation for developing the continued expansion options on our mainline system. We're moving ahead with the planning and development of all of those opportunities. Not only are they low-cost options to implement, they're low-cost to develop at this stage, and we'll continue to work with our customers to best match the timing and the projects with production growth. Finally, we see a window of opportunity emerging now to start early discussions with our customers on a post-CTS tolling agreement that creates value for our customers and for our shareholders. With growing production and lingering uncertainty around when and even if competing pipelines will ever come online, our customers are looking for cost-effective capacity solutions post-2020. Matching our compelling service offering with this customer need, we believe we can achieve multiple objectives within a new tolling agreement. Staged mainline expansion, competitive tolls, volume protection that mitigates material financial downside in a lower volume scenario, continued opportunity for incentive earnings growth, and it also positions us to introduce a contracting option on the mainline that a number of our customers are now expressing an interest in. So that wraps up my discussion of the mainline, and I'm going to move on and speak for a minute about the Express and Platt systems. As I mentioned earlier, we're excited to have these pipelines within our portfolio. Express Pipeline adds to our industry-leading position in terms of transporting Western Canadian heavy crude, and for the first time provides us with a meaningful presence serving the PADD 4 refining market. Similarly, the Platt system brings a diverse supply mix to the fold in addition to Western Canadian production and offers highly competitive tolls into Wood River. The contracted nature of Express, along with the index tolling approach on Platt, represent strong commercial underpinnings that mirror those elsewhere on our system. Now that we've had some time to spend looking more deeply at these assets, we're beginning to uncover a few options for organic growth that may be unlocked within the Enbridge portfolio. The first is to bolster the competitive position of the Platt system through connections with other assets. Capital has already been approved to connect Platt to our Spearhead pipeline by the fall of this year, thereby creating an option for Platt shippers to get their crude to Cushing and ultimately the Gulf Coast if they choose. We will also evaluate if a similar connection makes sense with the ETCO pipeline, once again providing potential access for these barrels to the Gulf. Second, as a large user of drag-reducing agent across our portfolio, Enbridge brings a much lower cost structure to bear in terms of evaluating the economics of adding additional capacity through DRA. We're looking closely for opportunities, particularly on the Platt system, to bring smaller increments of capacity to bear through the use of additional DRA. And finally, we're taking a close look at the Express system to determine whether a horsepower expansion would make sense to add up to 50,000 barrels per day of additional capacity, and how then we would look to link it into our downstream pipelines to ensure a solid market access plan. As I said, the first connection is underway, and we hope by the time we visit you again later in the year, we'll have more to report on these other opportunities. The highlight of our oil sands story for 2017 is that we'll be bringing $3.7 billion of new assets into service by year end. Volume growth across the Athabasca pipeline necessitated the Athabasca Twin pipeline coming into service early this year, which was a bit ahead of plan, given that the line will also be moving volumes for the Fort Hills project later this year. First production from Fort Hills is expected in December, and at that time we will put the Wood Buffalo extension into service, completing the path for these volumes from the Athabasca terminal down to Hardisty. The Norlite Diluent pipeline was commercially placed into service on May 1st, and shippers are now providing line fill before the system becomes fully operational. Norlite represents Enbridge's first diluent pipeline into the oil sands and is now an important piece of our regional competitive offering. These assets are underpinned by long-term take-or-pay contracts and will realize the tilted returns we have talked about in the past due to the underlying toll design and the expectation for additional third-party revenues, particularly on the Norlite system. We've also recently approved a relatively small capital project at the Cheecham Terminal that will boost returns by optimizing volume flows, reducing integrity, and at the same time increasing the flexibility for certain of our customers. There remains a million barrels a day of unsanctioned opportunity in the oil sands. Overall, our competitive position across the corridors we serve is rock solid, and our strategy to utilize these existing assets to move early-stage, smaller volumes from projects while securing commitments to capture the ramp-up of volume over time continues to pay dividends. The JCOS lateral, which we expect to come into service this fall, is a good illustration of this strategy at work. I apologize for not keeping up with the animation. So let me move on and talk a bit about the Bakken region. Our North Dakota system and Bakken expansion pipeline are highly competitive systems, attracting strong netbacks for the North Dakota producer due to the strength of the markets that can be accessed in PADD 2 and Eastern Canada via the Enbridge system. Our expectation is that we will continue to see strong throughputs on these systems as Dakota access comes into service, and in fact, in June, they are each nominated to near capacity. The highly competitive index tolls on the North Dakota system, combined with significant take-or-pay volumes on the Bakken expansion pipeline, provide a very stable financial outlook for these systems. Speaking of Dakota Access and the ETCO pipeline, as I mentioned, they're both in service as of June 1st, and we're very happy to own 27.6% of each pipeline because they check the box for everything we look for in an asset. Competitive tolls to strong markets, take-or-pay agreements with creditworthy customers, expansion potential, which has been validated by a recent open season, and potential synergies with other Enbridge assets. As oil prices firm up over time and production begins to grow once again in North Dakota, we're well situated to bring a range of options to the table to move additional volumes. And as I mentioned earlier, in the context of the mainline, the Bakken expansion pipeline provides us with a lot of optionality, potentially to free up mainline space for Canadian barrels, and or conceivably to be reversed once again and move some of the Saskatchewan side of the Bakken production into the markets through North Dakota. There was a question earlier about the Gulf Coast, and I do want to spend a few minutes talking about it. We continue to have interest in the Gulf Coast and are evaluating opportunities to create a platform for growth in that market. This was discussed at Enbridge Days in 2015, and as Al mentioned, we never really got it off the ground because we found something we liked better, which was Spectra. But we since picked the opportunity back up. And since that time, North American energy fundamentals and the expectation of significant export outlet needs are even stronger today than they were in 2015, and we continue to like the potential in this region for a number of reasons. A U.S. Gulf Coast platform and its link to the last mile needs of customer demand pull is more attractive to us than chasing around the continent to the next producing basin that generally represents opportunity of shorter duration. The multiple commodity needs of the region, crude, NGLs, refined products, provides a diversification that over time should provide stability to the assets in the region. And with the growing impact of crude oil exports on the pipeline industry, we need to be ensuring that assets are in place to allow Enbridge's pipelines to realize maximum value. We believe that we bring a commercial approach, operating expertise, and key relationships that we can leverage into an attractive opportunity, and I expect we'll be able to say more about our approach when we get together later in the year. So just to wrap up and summarize our key priorities, Al mentioned it in the opening, the continued safe and reliable operation of all of our assets is our top operating priority. We've had a number of fantastic years in terms of performance around this, and we're working hard to continue on that trajectory. I've spoken a lot about maximizing mainline throughput. It's extremely important to our customers, extremely important to ourselves, that we don't let our foot off the gas on that. Leveraging the Express and Platte pipeline assets into our system is going to create value this year. Executing on our secured growth plan and capacity expansion plans drives continued future growth for us. Finally, as I've mentioned, We're going to initiate the discussions regarding our post-CTS toll framework. So with that, thank you for your attention, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Hi, Andrew Kesky, Credit Suisse. Guy, maybe if you could just elaborate a little bit on what you called the contracting option for the mainline system, because if you're going from a month-to-month nomination process, one of the risks that you've always faced is as others build expansion capacity, whether it's KXL, TMX Twin, you have volumetric offloading risk. So if you're working towards a contracting option, if you could just elaborate on that.
Yeah, so, you know, we've already done... We have downstream contracts that draw barrels off the mainline system into our market access program. What we're hearing more recently is a bit of a mindset change with some of the customers in our core traditional markets. You know, they've made substantial investments of their own, and while, you know, we engage them all the time in terms of what our toll outlook is for on the mainline system and, you know, provide them confidence that we're going to continue to be the most competitive option, this whole issue around apportionment and the ongoing exposure to apportionment, even in a scenario where you can convince yourself that there's going to be a lot of pipeline capacity, we're seeing a mindset change with some of our customers. And it really is, we invested X billions of dollars in retrofitting this refinery. We want 100% certainty we can get the barrels delivered. So that seems to be the sentiment that is underpinning the desire by some of our on-system customers to consider a contract.
The back corner here, Guy.
Robert Kwan, RBC. Guy, just a few questions here on CTS. Just non-rate base, just as part of the drive CTS to add volumes to the system?
Yeah, so I'll start, and if I forget one of your questions, you might have to help me out. So first, have our customers asked us to re-engage on CTS? I think formally, the answer is formally no. The answer informally is yes. We've been discussing with our customers all of these options. They have been encouraging us that they do not want us to give up on the continued development of all of them. And the message has been, if that requires that we get involved and discuss the CTS and what that framework is going to look like beyond 2021 to give Enbridge the certainty we need around making continuing investment and give them the certainty that they need of the toll stability, they're willing to do that. Second question was to, I think you were asking me to rank the five. Yeah. Well, I think. You know, I think any time you look at a tolling arrangement and you consider it for a 10-year period, you have to look at it in terms of the balance of this. Obviously, as an organization that is not wanting to take on a lot of volume risk or other risk related to the future vagaries of oil price, the reestablishment of the volume floor in any new model will be extremely important to us. But at the same time, reestablishing that floor, where we get that toll set and ensuring the ongoing competitiveness into our core market in particular, so that we can continue to assure ourselves and continue to assure our customers that those barrels will flow first to those markets, is a very, very important part of our future planning. The contracting side of things is really one where we're going to have to figure that out and sort that out based on the customer needs. If we get the CTS right with the right volume floors, the contracting isn't necessarily an imperative for us. But if it's an imperative for certain key customers, then we're going to have to look at it. Obviously, you know, no rebasing on downside. You know, we've done a lot of work on looking at that transition, and we're highly confident that we can continue to be very competitive post-CTS without introducing material downside potential in our financial performance on the mainline. Your last question, I think, was how much capacity have we added? Is that?
Capacity we added on the mainline outside of rate, called for lack of a better term, rate-based investments that you're kind of eating the cost to drive the volume.
Yeah, well, I think I'm going to address that two ways. You know, first, in terms of true capacity adds, you know, the most significant recent capacity add, obviously, was the capacity on Alberta Clipper. So that was back in 2015. A lot of what we're talking about now in terms of things we're doing is increasing throughput within that existing framework of our capacities. If you looked at charts historically, you would see a bit of seasonality in terms of the throughput versus capacity, where what we're experiencing is that the light volumes tend to fall off the system in the spring and through the summer, build back up through the winter. We've now got, you know, effective July 1st, we've got between 125 and 150,000 barrel a day of new options to utilize that light space when it comes available. So we've been working very hard, as I mentioned, to create as much capacity to be available every day, and then an entire range of solutions to make sure that it gets utilized every day. So if you look at throughput additions, it would be bringing that 120, 150,000 barrels a day to bear through, you know, 8 or 9 months of the year when it otherwise might be unutilized. John, sorry.
Hi, it's Bill McKenzie with Hermes. I'm going back to the number one priority, safety and operational reliability. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, on a pipeline like DAPL, where you don't have a controlling interest, mm-hmm. and you do not have a majority stake, how do you ensure that the right culture is in place, that the testing is up to the standards you have at on other Enbridge control pipelines, and talk about operational reliability and how you ensure that, because any problems end up reflecting on Enbridge's name.
Correct. Well, I think the first way to respond to that is obviously during the due diligence phase of our examination of whether we wanted to get into that project, we had a very detailed look at what they expect their ongoing maintenance, integrity, safety programs are going to be. And we're confident that their plans and the fact that these are brand new pipelines are going to ensure that those pipelines operate safely for a very long time. On an ongoing basis, obviously, we have a role in the governance of the organization, and it is something that we will continue to watch. In fact, we have a it's quasi-formalized plan at Enbridge where we put any of the joint venture pipelines that we do not operate through a fairly healthy review of their own safety and reliability plans on a, it's not a dictated basis, but on a every couple year basis. So, you know, we will be sitting down with Energy Transfer, you know, 2 to 3 years from now, in addition to our ongoing governance, and just going back and saying, these are the Enbridge expectations for how we want to see a pipeline run, and we want to test what you're doing against that, and then promote closing any gaps that we see. Al has a question for me. Yikes.
I don't know. Is this going to work? Yes. Just to add to that, Guy mentioned the work we did before we got into the project. I just want to reemphasize that point, because obviously, I think what you're pointing out is a great question and something we asked ourselves a lot before we made the investment. But there's no doubt that when we did the work, it really came through for us that Energy Transfer had the same approach that we did. And they're very open to listening to us. And any good operator will actually want to hear thoughts and advice from other people on the board on the investment. And particularly in this case, just given the sensitivity to the area. Just want to add another point. Your slide that you had up there with the five things, Guy, going back to Robert's question, you know, I would say if you go back, Robert, to the original or this last round of incentive regulation with the CTS that we had with the producers, they really wanted a couple things, term, and they wanted certainty of what that toll was going to be. And really, that equation doesn't really change that much when you're talking to customers who want dedicated access to a market. So I would say, you know, the value proposition really here that we can offer is toll certainty and the fact that you can now extend terms. So that's a real important part. The competitiveness, as Guy was pointing out earlier, is also obviously very important, but that's a given, just given the position of the system. So just a couple points there to clarify.
Okay, and Jonathan's given me the hook here, so it's my pleasure to introduce Bern Yu, Executive Vice President, Chief Development Officer.